Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, the Packers are about to head off to Atlanta, Georgia. Haven't played at the Georgia Dome in 5 years. 2011 was the last trip to Atlanta. And so it's a homecoming of sorts for a Packers veteran in safety Morgan Burnett, played his college ball at Georgia Tech. And you interviewed Morgan earlier this week for a feature story that'll appear on Packers.com over the weekend leading up to the game about some family personal issues and the importance of this trip to him.
Yeah, this is the first time in 5 years, as you said, he's going back to Atlanta. He did joke in his group interview yesterday that it'll be the first time he's going without dreads back home. That was a point of contention earlier in his career with his mom, I believe. But yeah, the big thing with Burnett, family's a big part of him. Growing up in College Park, which I think is only about 20 minutes away from Atlanta.
Yeah.
And certainly it's pretty meaningful. He's expecting, I think, 20 tickets, I think he said he already got for his family and close friends. One person that will not be there, though, unfortunately, is his father, Cap, who passed away last year during training camp at only 58 years old. And I had a chance to talk with Morgan a little bit about that, because this is a guy that, when you talk about the leadership of Morgan Burnett and what he means to this Packers locker room, it all started with his father.
Yeah.
At a very early age. He's the one that exposed him to football. And up until, you know, every game, win, lose, tie, whatever it was, he would call Morgan afterwards, and they'd talk for extended periods of time. And he'd give him basically the pick-me-up he needed when if it was a down performance, and you know, the congratulations, too, when he'd have a good game. So it's tough for him. I know last year was difficult. He kind of kept it to himself. But this opportunity, going back, I know it means a lot to him and his family.
Yeah, I've covered Burnett from the start of his career when he arrived in 2010 as a third-round draft pick. And you won't find a more genteel, sincere, level-headed player in the Packers locker room when it comes to a guy to talk to. I've even, you know, bumped into him at the grocery store in town. It's just, you know, hey, Morgan, how's it going? I mean, he's an absolutely down-to-earth guy. I'm sure that comes from his parents as well. But he is a player who's been interesting to watch now over the course of his career, as he's gone from, you know, a guy trying to just get his feet wet in the NFL, and he had unfortunately a bad knee injury his rookie year that ended his first season very early. But he's developed into such a leadership role, you know, been voted a playoff captain at least once, if not twice
already, yeah.
In the course of his career, and really fun to watch him, you know, his presence just grow in that locker room over the years.
Yeah, I asked Mike McCarthy that earlier this week in terms of, you know, they always talk about him being the quarterback of the defense, but what he's meant to this locker room when he finally started to see those leadership traits come out. And McCarthy said, I mean, this is something that isn't new. I mean, he's been doing this for 4 or 5 years already. Even when he was a young guy in this league, he was one of those guys that really did help set the table, so to speak, for that defense and for that secondary. And I think that was one of the things, too, that he talked about when he was going through that rough time last year, just the family-like atmosphere that he had with the Packers. He looks at Darren Perry, his safeties coach, as a father-type figure. Sam Shields and him are very close. Ha-ha Clinton Dix was a guy that was there for him as well. And, you know, he talked about that, the fact that, you know, Sam and Ha would call him up just to see how he's doing and make sure that everything was going okay. And that was sort of his escape in a lot of ways. And now that you get to this year, it's something that he really wants to be a guy as he gets into, you know, his fifth and sixth and seventh season in the NFL that anybody can come to. It doesn't have to be a defensive back. He enjoys that leadership, and that's something that was instilled in him at a young age. So
yeah,
it goes a long way.
Yeah, kind of remarkable in a sense, too, as much as everything gets out these days in the media, social media, whatever, that, you know, what Burnett was dealing with last year on a personal level was completely kept quiet, not only by himself, but by his teammates and friends in the locker room. And just a tribute to him that he battled through that. And certainly in terms of the play on the field, whatever he was dealing with mentally and psychologically, you know, he stayed a true professional and really did his job through some tough times.
Yeah, and the thing that was tough, too, is he also was dealing with that calf injury at the beginning of last year as well. So there was a lot of things going on in his life, but I think you've seen him kind of pull through that. You know, he said that's something that's made his bond stronger with his coaches and his teammates and also with his family as well, him and his brother, Cap, you know, his father's namesake. So there's an eight-year difference between those two guys, but still a really tight friendship that was sort of forged by football. So he said when he goes on the field, it's about representing his family. That Burnett name means a lot to them, and he doesn't take that very lightly. So I'm guessing with him going back to Atlanta, first game in 5 years, in front of his friends and family, he's going to have plenty of motivation to show up.
Yeah, for sure. Well, a family connection of a different sort also to talk about when we come back after the break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford, joined by Wes Hodkiewicz and Wes Sting on the subject of family connections. The Matthews family, certainly a big name in football circles for a number of years. Clay Matthews for the Packers, Jake Matthews for the Atlanta Falcons, offensive tackle. Cousins, first cousins, they most likely will be going head-to-head at least on a few snaps, if not several snaps, on Sunday down in Atlanta. Clay has been limited in practice this week by a hamstring injury, but pretty much indicated to reporters on Thursday at his locker that he plans on playing, and this could be kind of an interesting head-to-head battle with his younger cousin.
Yeah, no question. I mean, two guys that both first-round draft picks, and you talk about Jake, the son of Bruce Matthews, the Pro Football Hall of Famer, Clay, obviously his father's namesake and grandfather for that matter. So for them to kind of get together here, I think is going to be fun for him. It was fun in 2014. Clay ended up with five tackles and a sack in that game. So maybe got the upper hand a little bit, but one thing he was very quick to caution when he was talking to reporters was that his cousin in that offensive line in general for Atlanta has vastly improved over the last two seasons. So he's expecting a really tight battle, assuming again that the hamstring checks out and he's on the field Sunday. It's something he's looking forward to. Winston Moss, the associate head coach and linebackers coach, was asked a little bit about how Matthews has been in the meetings this week, if and he's any different or how he is when he's looking at the film of his cousin. And Winston said, he's like, you know, he's just been very professional. And it's just, he understands it. He respects his cousin, and especially the progress he's made, but also understands that it's just another player. And it's somebody that, you know, is his opposition on Sunday. So a lot of love there, a very tight family bond, but certainly a lot of competition as well.
Yeah. You wonder, and we don't get a chance to talk to Jake, obviously, but you wonder as the younger family member of the duo, he's 6 years younger than Clay, if you know, maybe at the family gatherings, holidays, the backyard barbecues, if he got maybe picked on a little bit, and these now that they're in the NFL, these are maybe his chances for a little payback.
Yeah, it's really interesting too how that worked out. I mean, Clay Matthews Jr. and his kids, you know, Clay the third, and then also Casey, they were the linebackers.
Yeah,
and then you look over at Bruce, and you know, he had three kids that were all linemen that ended up going to Texas A&M. So it's really interesting to see that kind of paradox between the two. I mean, Bruce must have been the one getting the most of the, you know, the food at the table. But certainly when you go back, I think there must have been some battles there. I mean, you have to imagine, like I was just talking about with Morgan and his older brother Cap, there was an 8 year difference there, but they were still out there, you know, on doing backyard football and everything. So I'm not sure how it all worked with Clay and his cousins, but definitely a lot to go off of with that family tree.
Yeah, well, it really is remarkable when you look at that family story. I mean, the number of years that Bruce played and that Clay's dad played in the league, you know, and as you mentioned, Bruce is a Pro Football Hall of Famer, one of the best offensive linemen of all time, and then Clay's grandfather, also kind of the one who started it, was an NFL player way back in the day. You've just called up some of his information online. Tell the fans a little bit about Clay's grandpa.
Well, Clay Sr. was interesting because he's now, God bless him, I mean, 88 years old, and I know he's still, I think, doing some good things, I think, in Charleston, South Carolina now. He's still very active and extremely proud of, you know, his kids and his grandchildren, too. But he actually also was in the NFL. He was an offensive tackle and played a few years with the San Francisco 49ers. If I remember the story correctly, though, I think it's that it might have been that a family member, his wife, or somebody actually had him go do something else just because, you know, football, that isn't really where the money was.
And yeah.
And kind of spread out and branched out other ways. But
yeah, it wasn't the lucrative career livelihood that it is now.
But that was the patriarch, though. When you look at this, both the longevity, the durability, the production, I mean, that's the biggest thing when you think of the Matthews name. It's one of the first families of the NFL, and for that reason is that they all have done it for so long and have been so successful at it. I mean, when you look at Bruce, Clay Jr. is perennially on the top 100 finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, years.
Yeah, he's gotten consideration, and the longevity of his career is something hard to say at this point if he's going to make it or not. But certainly Clay the Third's candidacy, I think, will be taken into consideration when that time comes down the road.
Definitely.
As well.
And if you ask Kevin Green, he was asked about it a lot during the summer. I mean, he's very quick to mention that when he looks at who the players are today that remind him most of himself, he always says Clay Matthews III. And it's one thing I did ask Matthews about this a few weeks ago, and he said, I mean, we can't even get into that discussion yet. He's like, I got so many more years and so many more sacks to go before I can be in that conversation. But again, it just goes to show you how talented these guys are. And now for everybody, assuming Clay can get on the field in Atlanta, that's going to be one more showcase of it with the two Matthews cousins.
Yeah, and another quick note on Clay Matthews. He's closing in on the Packers' all-time sack record. Now, sacks, as in the official NFL statistic beginning in 1982, but Kabir Bajabiamila has the Packers record, and Clay is now within, is it six or seven?
Four.
Oh, he's within four.
Yep.
Okay, so
yep.
He's even
it was six
than
or
I
seven
thought.
Going into the season.
Okay.
Yeah, the record right now is KGB 74.5. Clay's at 70.5. He passed Reggie White this year, who was 68.5, and joked that he's happy that Reggie didn't play here longer.
Yeah, that's true. Reggie was only here for 7 or 8 years, about half of his career. So, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Clay Matthews by the end of this season can get that Packers record. But with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, shifting gears for the time being to the Packers offensive line. We heard from veteran right guard TJ Lang Thursday in the locker room. He sat out practice, the full pads, full contact, practice on Thursday afternoon, trying to just calm down a kind of an inflammation, I guess you might say, in his hip. He's been dealing with this hip injury off and on really for a couple of years now, it sounds like, but gave every indication that he plans to continue to play and will play on Sunday. He had some interesting comments from the offensive lineman's perspective about having these new running backs coming into the backfield and what that means for the guys up front. What'd you hear from him?
Yeah, well, first off, I just want to touch on, as you said, the injury that he's dealing with. I had really a lot of respect for TJ and how he handled that, though. He played 71 of 87 snaps, I think it was, in that game against Chicago. The Packers passed the ball a lot.
Yeah, and ran a lot of plays.
If you ask any offensive lineman, I mean, that's where you're going to be most stressed, is when you're constantly in pass pro and trying to hold back those bulls in the trenches. But he was dealing with the hip injury. Took a little more extra time in halftime to get that right and came back out there and finished the job. I think you got to give him a lot of credit on a short week for doing that, really toughing it out. So getting a little bit extra rest this week. As you mentioned, though, it is interesting. The Packers have had a pretty abrupt switch in their backfield.
Yeah.
You go from, for a number of years, him and this offensive line blocking for Eddie Lacy and James Starks. Suddenly that equation switches rapidly. Now with Nile Davis, Don Jackson, who they know a little bit about in practice, and also Ty Montgomery, getting used to him. And TJ had a funny story a little bit about how when Montgomery first was back there, I mean, he was just like shot out of a cannon, just jumping right up there, you know, kind of running into some of the defenders' backs, or running into the offensive linemen's backs. But sort of that feeling out process is one of the more interesting things that I think has come out of that game against Chicago. I thought Montgomery showed a lot of patience running between the tackles and the offensive line getting used to his running style.
Yeah.
We talk so much about the versatility of him and Cobb, but there's also an adjustment that the offensive line has to make, and I thought everything really clicked in that game against the Bears.
Yeah, when you mentioned Montgomery kind of being maybe a little too fast at the start when he first started to take some handoffs, I think we saw the same thing from Don Jackson in the game against Chicago when he got his first carry or two. And Mike McCarthy, if I recall, even commented on it at one point that, you know, he's just a little too quick in terms of trying to hit the hole. And, you know, these plays, you know, timing is such a key element to it. It's not just take the ball and run. You know, there's timing, there's footwork. It's about setting up the blocks, letting the blocks develop and whatnot. And you know, for the Packers to have to make this evolution on the fly during the regular season, it's not easy to still be able to maintain a running game that you hope to maybe get 100 yards rushing, right, you know, collectively over, you know, through this backfield by committee or however they're going to do it. But so far it's working, and you hope it keeps evolving in a positive direction.
Yeah, and a testament too to them to be able to find that. I mean, still having a 100-yard performance in that game despite all the changeover that they had, certainly a chunk of that coming from Montgomery. But what I thought was really telling too is, you know, Nile Davis had only rushed, I think, maybe twice in that game, only had two carries, only a couple days into the playbook. But he said in the locker room afterwards, he's like, I look at that offensive line, I can't wait to run behind it. He's like, he just being able to see the system and see what they have in front of him, he just sees all the possibilities there for what's available for them going forward. And as he gets more comfort, Don Jackson gets more comfort. We talked about this earlier this week and you know, the time that they've spent not only with Aaron Rodgers the night before games, but you look at Ben Sermons and putting in the extra hours with Davis and getting him caught up on the playbook and everything that goes into it. Those are all things I think in the long run really benefit this team, and certainly the Packers too. Don't forget, I mean, they're hoping to get James Starks back here in a few weeks. So still a lot of potential there, and I think being able to get through this is something that can only make them stronger in the long run.
Yeah, maybe a fantasy football owner's nightmare with trying to figure out exactly who's going to be carrying the ball for the Packers. But for now, a good problem to have, the Packers trying to get a lot of guys involved, and we'll see where it goes from here. But with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, before we go this week, let's take a quick look at some of the other games around the NFL on Sunday that will have some bearing on the Packers' status in the NFC. I'll start with Detroit heading down to Houston. The Lions on a three-game winning streak, all three wins at home. Now they hit the road after this home stretch to face a Houston team that is still above 500, but admittedly struggling on the offensive side of the ball with Brock Osweiler and trying to figure out some things at quarterback there. A big game for Detroit. The Lions have a trip to Minneapolis next weekend, a shot at the Vikings. And if Detroit going into that game at 5-3 versus 4-4 could be a huge difference.
Yeah, this is a big game. And I know a lot of times we'll say, well, at this point in the season, the game's a big game, trying to, you know, separate yourself and distinguish yourself. But both for the Texans, trying to stake a claim going back-to-back in that division, despite some of the quarterback turnover, despite losing now J.J. Watt for likely the season. And then you look at Detroit, who's been in sort of this situation where, you know, they have really good weeks, and then they obviously had some weeks there where they just weren't able to get the production on both sides of the ball. Well, suddenly they find themselves in a situation here to go up two games above 500 in arguably, I'm going to say arguably, the best division right now in the NFC. So this is critical for them. And then when you look at Houston, they put a lot of resources this offseason into that offense.
Yeah.
With Lamar Miller, you talk about Osweiler. They want to find some chemistry there, find some kind of familiarity, develop a system. Bill O'Brien retook the play calling duties a few weeks ago, much like Mike McCarthy did last year, trying to, you know, build a little bit of more momentum with that offense. And certainly right now the Texans are having a hard time finding their footing.
Yeah, for sure. A couple other games to look at in the NFC. I'm curious, these, I guess I will call them NFC West games, the ones involving Seattle and Arizona. Seattle goes to New Orleans and Arizona goes to Carolina. And I know New Orleans and Carolina trying to, you know, find their footing and maybe try to make a move. They have big home games. Seattle and Arizona both heading on the road, coming off of that 95 play defensive slugfest. You wonder, you know, how much they have in the tank and whatnot for a game like this. And certainly New Orleans playing at home against Seattle, New Orleans offense can score with anybody, and if Seattle's defense is low on the energy level at all from that game last Sunday night, you know, this could really be an interesting ball game.
Well, they're both interesting for entirely separate reasons. You look at New Orleans right now; Drew Brees is on pace to, I think, reset the passing record. which does he already own that? I'm trying to remember.
I think he does.
He does. Yeah, I mean, because he broke that yardage a few years ago. Yeah. Well, there he's going to do it. It looks like he's going to do it again if this current pace keeps up.
Yeah.
But it's a big task going up against the Seahawks and their defense. I mean, that's been the biggest constant for them this season.
Yeah, absolutely.
That side of the ball. And then you look at the NFC Championship rematch between the Arizona Cardinals.
Isn't that something?
And Carolina Panthers. And Michael, if you would have told me at the beginning of the season that in week 8, the Cardinals and Panthers would be seeing each other again with a 4 combined wins between them, I would not have believed you.
No.
And I would have taken that bet.
Not at all.
Well, suddenly, the Panthers are trying to pull themselves back into this thing in what should be you should have the best chance of winning that division in football. And then you got Arizona, who's trying to peak up above 500. So that's going to be a competitive one. I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and a big clash in the NFC on Sunday Night Football. Philadelphia goes to Dallas. The two rookie quarterbacks, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, both of these teams above 500. The Cowboys with just the one loss back in the season opener against the Giants. The Eagles coming off of the big win over the Vikings, handing Minnesota its first loss of the year. This will be a big clash on Sunday night.
Absolutely. Huge implications for that division. And certainly the spotlight will be shining bright on both of those young quarterbacks. And now you look at Prescott and Tony Romo's looks like he's almost ready to return. What do the Cowboys do in that situation? And certainly from Wentz's perspective, trying to keep his early season momentum going. Big test, too, for that defense in Philadelphia. They've had a nice start. How do they do against the Cowboys?
Yeah, for sure. And these are two teams that will meet again later in the year. Monday night, Minnesota at Chicago, a game that Packers fans are going to want to keep their eye on. We can talk about that one when we pick up again next week. But we'll call that a wrap on Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.